Emperor Tales of the Frozen South by CWB and read by Ghost of Nuggets Past. Chapter 24. Teutomaika. Ika's Revenge. Summary. Moringa's theft of John and Sherlock's treasure takes on a new meaning of epic proportions. Notes. This chapter revisits the legend of Kororá. Please note that I have changed Kororá's father's name from Karorehe to Atutahi. I'll explain more in the end notes. The next morning, Sherlock waits until Huddy wanders down to the water for her daily ablutions before nudging John awake. John mumbles and fusses and tries his hardest to burrow back under Sherlock's wing, but Sherlock manages for once not to succumb to the adorableness of John, and insists that he wake up. John raises his head and blinks at him, smacks his bill together a few times, and slumps against Sherlock's chest. Sherlock perseveres. "John, I'm serious. Wake up," Sherlock whispers. He doesn't want to wake the other pigs in the huddle. He knows by now that he can trust Malling, Lestra, and Stamford, but he still has no idea what to make of Irina and Janine. And Anthea? No, she mustn't hear a single word of what he has to say.
"What are you all in a fluff about, Sherlock? It's not time to wake up. It's time to snuggle." "Stop being cute, John Ling."
John sighs and rubs his eyes with his wings. He slouches down even more, his chin flat against Sherlock's chest, and stares up at him.
"Okay, I'm awake." "John, do you remember what we overheard last night? Huddy and Moringa fighting?"
"Shh, I remember. I think I've pieced together what they were talking out."
"Yeah?
Huddy and Moringa were fighting last night?"
Mulling's little face peeps up over Lestra's shoulder.
"No, nope, not at all. Go back to sleep."
"Who's fighting?"
Lestra asks Mulling.
"Huddy and Moringa,"
Mulling answers, eyes still on John and Sherlock. Sherlock glares down at John and gives him his best "see what you did" face.
"You asked. You asked if I remembered, and I was just clarifying. I'm tired. You should let me sleep."
"What were they fighting about?"
Lestra and Malling have wiggled their way through the others and are now pressed up against Sherlock and John.
"About where to go to breakfast today."
Lestra stands up on his toes and glances back toward the council grounds.
"I'd hurry up and tell us the truth if I were you, because she's going to come back any time now. And if you don't tell us, I'll ask her myself."
"Oh, for the love of..." "Fine, but it won't make any sense at all without the backstory."
"Better get started then. What's the backstory?"
"John and I found an ice cave halfway up the berg. We go there sometimes to hang out. We like to bring special items we find."
"Treasure,"
John interrupts.
"Treasure, yes, fine. Little things like feathers and bones and dried sea plants."
"It was all very special to me,"
John sniffs. "I know, John Ling, I'm sorry."
"John Ling? Is that like Mulling?"
"Shh, Lestra, let him talk."
"That's where we were when Moringa found us, ambushed us, and made us these cuckoo accusations. But John and I knew we couldn't go up there alone again, so we asked Huddy to go with us as a chaperone. Not that we need a chaperone. Not that we need one. We went yesterday after lunch, and she has stolen everything, our entire treasure."
John is definitely awake now.
"She stole your treasure?"
Mulling's face is the very definition of indignant.
That's just awful."
"I know."
John stands up on Sherlock's feet now, back to front, the top of his head crammed under Sherlock's bill.
"What on earth and sea would she need our feathers for? And fish bones and a seal tooth?"
Everyone falls quiet. Mulling and Lestra are staring above Sherlock's head and shuffling back and forth on their feet.
"What seal tooth would that be, if you don't mind me asking, young friends?"
Sherlock wraps his wings around John and shuffles around in a circle, bringing John with him.
"Good morning, Elder Erebus. How are you this morning, sir?"
"I find myself of a most curious nature this morning, young Sherlock. Thank you for asking. And how are all of you? You certainly are awake at a crisp and vibrant time of day, aren't you?"
The four junior Pangs greet Erebus. How the other three manage to sleep on is beyond Sherlock, but he's grateful for their continued slumber and silence.
"Wonderful. I'm so glad to hear that you are all well. Now, Sherlock and John, would you do me the favor of walking with me for a while? I do enjoy a little walk about first thing in the morning, and I believe we have something of importance to discuss."
Sherlock nods and bows to Molling and Lestra, who stare up at him in intimidated wonder, and gestures for Sherlock and John to follow him. They are some distance away from the crush when Erebus stops, turns to them, and speaks.
"Dearest young Pangs, I do apologize. I neither meant to startle you nor worry you when I approached the crush, but I am glad that I intervened when I did. I have spoken with Huddy, and she has informed me of the loss of your personal artifacts from the ice cave. She feels certain that Moringa absconded with these items. I must admit, I was reluctant to assign blame so soon, without endeavoring to understand her motives. Now, however, I believe I may understand. John, young sir, as I approached the crash this morning, I believe I overheard you say something about a sealed tooth. Would that be correct?"
"Yes, sir, it was ours. She took it."
"And where did you find your sealed tooth?"
"On the path, sir, on the path that Sherlock and I take to the ice cave. It's the longer one, the one that curves around the back and side of the peak, because when we first started going to the cave, my shoulder was still injured, and that path isn't as steep as the regular path."
"I completely understand. Do go on."
"Well, that's all, sir. We found it about halfway up the path, not long after we started going to the cave."
Erebus looks up at the sky for a long moment, then looks back at them and nods.
"I understand. And now it's gone?"
"Yes, sir. Why would she do something so mean?"
"Did you tell Huddy exactly what had been taken?"
"I don't think so, sir. It didn't seem important."
Sherlock knew the moment Erebus asked them to step away that there was something significant about Moringa's actions, something far more deliberate than merely wanting to further upset two young Pangs with whom she had a fishbone to pick. The line of Erebus's questioning leaves no doubt in his mind.
"Sir, why is the seal tooth so important?"
Erebus smiles at Sherlock.
"That depends, Sherlock, on whether or not it is the seal tooth."
"Which?"
"Before I answer, let me ask you this. Could you tell from looking at the tooth if it was recently lost of its owner, or if it was an older specimen?"
"There was no blood on it, sir, and no root left. It was yellowed and chipped and quite large. I was of the impression that it was a tooth lost long ago, and lost from an elder seal as well."
"I see. I agree with you. It does not sound like a recent loss or a young tooth."
"Is that relevant?"
"It very well may be."
John has been looking back and forth between them while they've discussed the attributes of the tooth, and now takes his chance to speak.
"You forgot something, Sherlock. The snowflake, remember?" "Oh, yes, of course. On the back of the tooth, sir, toward the pointed end, there was a shape, like a snowflake, with six points. It looked as if it had been etched, but there were no grooves at all. It was slightly different color, too, quite golden. It was very peculiar."
Erebus closes his eyes and hums.
"Is that important, sir, about the snowflake?"
John asks, not wanting to disturb the elder, but too curious to stay quiet.
"Young friends, it is not a snowflake. It is a star that our kind have been looking for a very, very long time. You could not have known We rarely talk about it anymore. Most, in fact, doubt it ever existed in the first place. Those who believed gave up searching, and the legend dwindled and diminished, and is all but mythology now.
Sherlock is about to nudge John's open bill shut, but suspects that his is hanging open even more.
What legend would that be, sir?
Teukomaiga. Have you heard of this legend?
No, sir.
We have been remiss. As I said, it has all but disappeared from our teachings, given up long ago, along with the hope it carried.
Sherlock's brain speeds through various rooms in his ice palace, quickly making connections. He remembers that Ika was Korora's half-brother, god of the seas, born of the star Atotahi and the male god Terra. Utu, he knows, is the ancient word for revenge. Ika's revenge.
Ika's revenge of Korora? Against who or what? Against Apo?
John snaps his bill shut and stares at him, blinking.
Amazing. Absolutely brilliant. You think so? I know so.
You are too.
Nah, but thanks.
Erebus gives them this brief moment of mutual adoration, then continues.
Ika was mentioned briefly in the legend told to you by Vela when you were but hatchlings. Do you recall the part of the legend when Apo asked Korora how she could produce an egg without the male gift?
John nods, fluffing a bit at the mention of the male gift.
And do you remember what Korora said in response to him? She said he could not hope to know all the mysteries of the heavens and the gods that ruled them. She reminded him that her father, Atutai, had lain with a male god to create her brother, and then with a female, Kapua, to produce herself. Her brother, or half-brother, if you will, was Ika.
I see. And is Sherlock right? Did he seek revenge against Apo for what he did to his sister and to Pono?
He is correct.
Erebus pauses to bow, just the slightest nod of acknowledgement to Sherlock, then continues.
He sought revenge for Korora's heartbreak, for the death of Pono, and for the suspension of Amarere's arrival.
She's still stuck in that egg?
Oh, John, Sherlock thinks, turning his head so as not to offend John with his amused expression. Erebus doesn't blink an eye.
She is, as you say, dear John, still stuck in that egg. At least that's what the legend tells us. The legend does not tell us what we emperors must do to release her and to return peace and harmony to our kind. There's been much speculation, of course.
Ada Erebus, how does the seal tooth relate to Korora and Ika? Does it have something to do with releasing Amarere?
Sherlock has tried to further deduce the connection and has a theory, but it doesn't want to come across as a braggart in front of his Ipo or the elder.
Let us keep walking so that we don't draw attention to ourselves. There is a patch of sun there near the shore. We can warm ourselves.
Erebus leads the way, and John and Sherlock follow. John keeps tugging on Sherlock's wing and whispering under his breath, but in his attempt to be quiet, Sherlock can barely hear him. Finally, John begins to use the secret language they created when they first met, but instead of using his feet, he uses his wings. It's a bit more difficult to understand, but Sherlock follows along well enough.
Secret treasure, not no important, must find.
Sherlock signs back, suspecting he looks like he's having a seizure while doing so.
Wait. Story first. Get help. Other pings.
The sunny spot bathes them in warmth, and all three emperors turn their faces toward the sky, close their eyes, and take a deep breath.
Now, that is simply lovely, isn't it?
Sherlock agrees, but can't find it in himself to give a tail feather about the sun, not when there are stolen legendary seal teeth to consider. Still, he won't rush Erebus, who is older and has been through so much. and finds such comfort in a spot of sun. He waits, and he waits, but after 15 entire heartbeats, he can wait no more.
Sir?
Erebus slowly blinks himself back to them, stretches his neck, wings, and back, and sighs.
Where were we?
How does the seal tooth tie into the legends?
Ah, yes, just so. Sherlock, John, what I am about to tell you remains one of the biggest mysteries of Pengkind. Had I not overheard you this morning, it is very likely you would never have heard this, not in all your winters. That I tell you now does not signify that the legend is true or that it is false. It is simply told. Korora took Pono and Omarere back with her to the heavens. We see them there in the stars during the darkness of winter. Korora abandoned her kind, never to return, never again to mate or walk amongst us, to share her wisdom, her aid, her love. You can only imagine how hard this was on her. Most pangs, I'm sure you can imagine, think only of how hard her withdrawal was on them. However, Korora's self-imposed isolation cost her a very great deal. Without her purpose, she began to fade. Without participating in the mating season, without sharing of herself and being loved in return, she withered. Ika, not far from her in his own realm of the night sky, witnessed her suffering. He tried to help her, to encourage her, but she was unresponsive, even to her own family. Concerned that she would vanish altogether, he devised a plan. Fearing for her stability and the soundness of her judgment, he would not leave his sister's side. Instead, he called upon the strongest, most trustworthy of his own progeny, and made a pact. He would instill in this chosen one half of his own power. They would be blessed with his speed, his strength, and all his capabilities as a god, all but one. They would retain their own mortality. The descendant was charged with finding the Heartstone, with or without Oppo, and delivering it to him. He believed that if he could retrieve the Heartstone, perhaps he would also find a way to restore Pono's life, free Amarire, and bring Korora back from the brink upon which she was perishing. He transferred half his power, as promised, to his scion, and bade her a safe, successful journey.
"Who was it?" John asks, practically vibrating with curiosity.
"We believe her name was Porangi."
Sherlock flips through the language files in his hand.
"That's odd, isn't it? Her name has a double meaning."
John looks between Sherlock and Erebus, waiting for one of them to speak.
"Well, what did it mean?"
"Traditionally, to seek, to search, but also in more modern times, lunacy, madness," Sherlock explains.
Erebus nods. "It has been suggested that Porangi went mad in her quest to find the Heartstone. And do you see now how Ika did it? How he transferred his power?"
Sherlock raises his wing as if in a lesson and jumps up and down.
Me, I know."
John sighs.
"Of course you do. Ika transferred his power to the tooth, the seal's tooth. That's why it has the image of the star on it, isn't it? Am I right?"
"You are right."
"Okay,"
John injects over Sherlock's hollering. "That makes sense. But did she find Apo? Did she retrieve the Heartstone? And why is the tooth important now?" Sherlock and John, leaning forward on their toes into the elder's very words, completely captivated, don't dare move. They don't blink. They don't breathe.
"All good questions, young sir. We doubt that she found Apo, or the Heartstone, as Ika and Korora remain in the sky, unmoving. We know from the legend, if accurate, that Apo did not keep the Heartstone, as dictated by Korora, but threw it into the tundra before he himself disappeared. The tooth, though, is all that matters now. It is no longer bound to Porangi. Therefore, the pact to find the Heartstone no longer stands. The power, however, remains.
And what could the possessor of that power do? John asks.
Whoever holds the tooth holds the power to fulfill a god's desires.
Like what?
Like absolutely everything. For good, for evil, for one, for all. The sky, my young friend, is the limit.
And with that, the three of them look to the heavens and imagine. Notes, Maori translations. Cuckoo, fearful, dreadful, awful, horrible. Te, the. Uto, object of revenge, sworn enemy, target of revenge. Ma, of, for. Ika, marine animals, of the sea. Ipo, boyfriend, girlfriend, sweetheart. Porangi, to seek, to search, lunacy, madness, to be insane. On changing Kararahe's name. During the process of researching appropriate names for Korara's brother, I realized that I didn't like Kararahe's name, or what it means, four-legged animal. I decided I wanted him to be a star that mated with the gods and goddesses and made all the little animals. Atutahi, also called cannabis in English vernacular, in Maori myth, was born of the stars Puanga and Takurura, and is the second brightest star in the sky, behind Sirius. This star appears in the constellation Carina, which is A's southern circumpolar constellation. It all worked, so I went with it. I've changed its name in previous chapters. And this is why it takes me 6 hours to write one sentence.